Hello and welcome to edition number 2121 of the Witney Talking News, which we are recording at the High Street Methodist Church in Witney on Thursday, 13th of August. I'm Debbie Diacon and I edited this edition. Beside me at the recording controls we have Rob Oxbring. And this week we have items mainly from the Witney Gazette. Our four readers are Jean Thompson, Byron Russell, Melissa Ellis and Mick Walsh. So let's have our first story, which is about a row over how democratic decisions are made regarding planning applications, and will be read by Jean.
Yes, this is entitled Democracy Row Erupts on Fresh Policy for Planning. A row has broken out over the loss of democracy as 18,000 homes are set to be built in Oxfordshire. West Oxfordshire District Council and senior figures have come out against new national planning rules which will reduce the number of decisions made by councillors. Andy Graham, leader of the council, said, "We know residents care deeply about changes in their communities and valued the public debate on planning applications held at committee. We believe taking more decisions away from the elected members is a step backwards. We've made our position clear with government. However, now the changes have been passed, we will be required to comply with them from October." Executive Member for Planning and Infrastructure, Liz Lefman, added that the changes will constrain the transparency and openness in process. The new national scheme of delegation, which will be in force from October the 31st, comes as West Oxfordshire has been told it must plan for around 18,000 homes by 2043. These will include large-scale developments, such as the partially occupied 700-home Bryce Meadow estate and smaller housing schemes. Controversy has surrounded some new build areas, such as Buttercross Lane in Witney, which has had numerous flooding issues. Head of the Oxfordshire Conservatives, Liam Walker, said he shared the council's concerns about the changes, which it is estimated will see the proportion of decisions made by committee fall from 5% to 3%. In addition, ward councillors will no longer be able to ask for an application to be decided by a committee, with the government having said these changes will make planning decisions more consistent, certain and efficient. Mr. Walker said, "Planning decisions can have a huge and lasting impact on local communities, and I worry that local views could be increasingly ignored if fewer applications can be scrutinised by elected councillors. Councillors provide an important democratic safeguard, bringing local knowledge and giving residents confidence that contentious applications can be properly challenged and debated in public. With thousands of new homes proposed across West Oxfordshire, now is completely the wrong time to reduce democratic scrutiny of planning decisions." The government declined to respond to West Oxfordshire District Council's criticism. Witney Labour councillor Andrew Coles said the party has long argued that more housing is needed, but delivered in the right way and in the right places.
Next is Byron, and he has a story about MPs defending the decision to build the park and ride, even though 2 years on, it's still not in use.
Indeed, it's completely empty. But the headline reads, "MPs defend decision to complete empty park and ride site." Three Oxfordshire MPs have defended the decision to complete an unused park and ride before wider A40 improvements to save taxpayers millions of pounds. Witney MP Charlie Maynard, Bicester and Woodstock MP Callum Miller, and Oxford East MP Leila Moran backed Oxfordshire County Council's approach following criticism over the cost of maintaining the currently unused site. In a joint statement, they said, "The park and ride was intended to be delivered alongside the wider A40 improvements, but exceptional inflation in 2022 pushed the full programme beyond the available budget. Oxfordshire County Council's decision to proceed with the fully funded and approved park and ride saved taxpayers millions in additional construction costs. The 850-space park and ride on the A40 has remained unused since construction was completed in January 2024 because it cannot open until a connection to the wider A40 scheme is delivered. Almost £300,000 has been spent on maintenance and security since then, according to figures revealed by Oxfordshire County Council. The costs prompted criticism from Councillor Liam Walker, leader of the Conservative group, at the Council, who previously had described the project as a monument to Liberal Democrat failure, arguing residents were being left to pay the bill while the site sat idle behind locked gates. Stagecoach, which is expected to operate services from the site, said it was working closely with Oxfordshire County Council ahead of the park and ride's planned opening in early 2027. A spokesperson said, "We are working closely with our partners at Oxfordshire County Council to support the delivery of bus services from the ancient park and ride site once it becomes fully operational."
Now we have Melissa with a story on the gifts our MPs receive, which they are required to declare.
Town's MP tops list of gifts following free legal advice. Tennis tickets, trips abroad and wine are some of the items given to Oxfordshire's politicians who have received more than £200,000 in donations in the last parliamentary year. The county's MPs have accepted thousands of pounds worth of donations, gifts and hospitality in the last year and have listed them in the Register of Members' Financial Interests as per the parliamentary rules. These require politicians to declare donations of over £1,500, supporting MP work, gifts of over £300 and visits outside the UK relating to MP activity at the same threshold. All of Oxfordshire's MPs, except Ollie Glover, MP for Didcot and Wantage, have declared funds and gifts of this sort. They do not include income streams from additional jobs. The MP who has received the most in donations, gifts and support is Charlie Maynard, MP for Witney, who accepted an estimated £152,170 worth. A significant part of this is for pro bono legal advice services, which had previously seen Mr. Maynard investigated by the Parliamentary Standards Committee when he failed to register them in 2025. The gifts and donations to Mr. Maynard this year also included £366 worth of wine for a fundraising event, £2,275 in food, and a free stay with an estimated value of £14,000 in a family member's flat. Mr. Maynard said, "I was offered pro bono free legal advice to fight Thames Water's plan to take on yet more debt in the High Court and the Court of Appeal and an application to the Supreme Court. I'm extremely grateful to the excellent team of lawyers for being so generous with their time and effort. Without this, Thames Water customers, including my constituents, would have had no voice in court. I stayed at my sister-in-law's flat for a few months while I was working in Westminster, and she kindly let me stay for free. So this meant I had no accommodation expenses for this period. It is right that there is full transparency and public scrutiny of the gifts and donations that MPs receive."
Now, Mick is going to tell us about some cuts for some disability allowances.
Yes, the Green Party are up in arms. The headline is, "Disability support cuts will, quote, impoverish the vulnerable." The County Council's plans to reduce allowances for disabled people have been met with concern. Green County councillors have criticised Oxfordshire County Council's decision to reduce the disability-related expenditure agreement, as well as increased charges for adult social care, transport and home monitoring devices. The allowance is set to drop from 35% to 25%, which will mean disabled people will be able to keep less of their benefits to meet disability-related costs, with a flat fee of £10 per day being introduced for council-arranged transport. Meanwhile, the weekly cost of home support telecare services will increase from £6 to £9.87. Overall, the changes are predicted to save the council £1.8 million per year. However, the Greens have argued that these changes, while perhaps minor on paper, represent a real reduction in the financial support available to meet the unavoidable costs of living with a disability for many residents. The Green Party has argued that while every saving is significant in balancing the books, this change represents a very small proportion of the council's overall adult social care budget, which exceeds more than £330 million each year. This means the impact on individuals is likely to be, quote, disproportionately greater than the financial benefit to the council, according to the Greens. Leader of the Green Group, Ian Middleton, said, "As someone who grew up with a disabled father, I recognise how vital state support is to allow people with a disability to live as normal life as possible. While I recognise that savings have to be made, the question is not whether difficult decisions are necessary, but where we begin to make those decisions. These proposals all target people with disabilities and those receiving care at home. These changes would seem to fly in the face of those aims. People with disabilities often face higher daily living costs that many of us never have to consider. No one chooses to need telecare. No one chooses to need accessible transport. No one chooses to incur disability-related expenditure. These are not discretionary purchases. They are the costs of living with a disability. Asking people to pay more for necessities is fundamentally different from reducing spending elsewhere." Green Group lead spokesman on adult social care, Councillor Robin Jones, said, "If we are a progressive and compassionate administration, we should surely not be looking to make relatively modest savings of 0.4% of the budget by further impoverishing the most vulnerable in our society. I would therefore urge Cabinet to reconsider this proposal during the consultation process."
This one's entitled "Water Debate Date Set After Campaign." Water campaigners from West Oxfordshire have succeeded in getting a debate arranged in Parliament. Following a campaign by Ash Smith and Professor Peter Hammond of the group Windrush Against Sewage Pollution, or WASP, a parliamentary debate on bringing water into public ownership has been scheduled for September the 14th. The debate, which is officially on whether to hold a referendum to bring water into public ownership, was called after a petition proposing it topped 163,000 signatures, well beyond the threshold needed to trigger a parliamentary debate. Mr. Smith said that the previous Starmer government hadn't been listening. He said, "It is time for democracy to come back into play, and that is why we started the petition for a referendum and why the debate is important. There has never been a more important time to write to MPs and tell them they need to be at the debate on September the 14th and know what they're talking about. WASP and the Sewage Campaign Network can help them with evidence." He disputed the government's recent arguments about keeping water companies such as Thames Water private, most of which revolve around cost. He previously joined other campaigners, including former lead vocalist of the punk band The Undertones, Fergal Sharkey, to deliver a letter to the Department of the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, or DEFRA, to call out lies and gets Thames Water into public ownership. The UK's largest water company, which serves approximately 16 million people, has been criticised in recent years for sewage pollution in waterways, rising bills and service disruption, with the regulator Ofwat issuing It's a record fine of over £120 million last year. Thames Water has confirmed that it is fixing over 1,000 leaks weekly amid a temporary hosepipe ban affecting millions of its customers. A spokesperson for the water company said it is fixing 20% more leaks than normal, or the equivalent of one every 10 minutes. The company has said the prolonged hot and dry weather puts pressure on the water pipes, with dry ground putting a strain on the pipes. At the same time, the company has put the blame on customers as higher demand for water increased, making bursts and leaks more likely.
And the next headline reads, MP inspired to share personal cancer story. Whitney MP Charlie Maynard has rallied around a Commonwealth Games hero who was recently diagnosed with cancer after his emotional plea to the Prime Minister. Terminally ill Archie Goodburn recently broke down in tears after begging Andy Burnham to invest more in improving cancer treatment. The 25-year-old, who holds the Scottish 50-metre breaststroke record, was diagnosed with inoperable brain cancer just 2 years ago. Days after his Commonwealth Games appearance, he appeared on BBC Breakfast to send a stark message to Mr. Burnham. He said, "We welcome the Rare Cancers Bill, but that Rare Cancers Bill, we truly do not believe, is going to be enough to make the changes. The Rare Cancers Bill covers 14 different types of cancers, rare cancers. Brain cancer is one of those in terms of incidence of diagnosis, but it's not the same in terms of the number of deaths it causes. It is extremely deadly." "Yes, it's rare, but it's extremely deadly. This frustrates me immensely, and the Rare Cancers Bill establishes two new positions, a clinical lead and a research lead. These two roles are part-time across 14 different types of cancers, and they accumulate to just 36 days a year. Brain cancer is the biggest killer of children and adults under 40, and yet it receives just 1% of the national spend on cancer research. Now, the Whitney MP has shown support for the young swimmer. Mr. Maynard said, 3 years ago, my sister Georgie was diagnosed with glioblastoma, an aggressive and fast-developing brain cancer. Since then, she has been determined to do everything she can to help others facing the same diagnosis. I accompanied her and the team at Brain Cancer Justice as they delivered their petition for more funding to Number 10 last year, and was proud to support the Rare Cancers Bill through Parliament. But more must be done to recognise brain cancer as the time-critical disease it is. The government must speed up access to clinical trials through a proper national register, make drug rules more generous to attract research into the UK, and guarantee a fast route to NHS reimbursement, and invest in growing the UK's clinical research workforce. The Prime Minister has now responded to Mr. Goodburn's emotional appeal. Burnham started by thanking the athlete, adding, "I know how hard it must have been. What you're doing for other people while you're going through all this yourself shows the best of us. I'd really like to meet you and hear from you directly, and I've asked my team to get in touch."
This article is titled, "Drop in Serious Road Crash Casualties in County." Collisions and casualties on Oxfordshire's roads are falling in contrast to rising incidents elsewhere. Recently confirmed Department for Transport figures show around 18% drop in people killed or seriously injured on Oxfordshire's roads compared to the previous year. In contrast, the wider Thames Valley area appears to have recorded an approximately 20% increase in KSIs, which are people who are killed or seriously injured, during the same time period. Tim Bearder, leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, "This is extremely encouraging. Oxfordshire is bucking the wider Thames Valley trend, with serious and fatal casualties falling significantly at a time when neighbouring areas are seeing increases. This shows the approach we have taken in Oxfordshire is working. We have made a conscious decision as a county to take speed seriously because lower speeds save lives, reduce the severity of injuries, and make our communities safer and healthier places to live. Much of the improvement is being attributed to the county's rollout of 20 mile an hour schemes, introduced at no cost to town or parish councils. More than 275 communities have implemented these measures since the scheme began.
And story about there's helicopters and 200 police officers have been searching for a missing Burford woman. A major search is continuing for a missing woman who has not been seen for more than a week. Caroline Heininger was last seen and pictured by CCTV on the A40 opposite Burford Lodge at 5:27 a.m. on Wednesday, August the 5th. The 66-year-old of Shilton Road in Burford was walking westwards, detectives have said. Her family has issued a statement urging anybody with information of their loved one's whereabouts to come forward. They said, Caroline is loved dearly by her husband, children, dog Archie and her many friends. We are all willing her a safe return home. We would like to express our deepest gratitude to everyone who has contributed to the search effort so far and would encourage anyone who has information to come forward. CCTV images were released of Mrs. Heininger dressed in light clothing and shorts. The search has involved helicopters and 200 police officers as well as many local volunteers. A police spokesman said, "We hope that someone may recognise her, remember seeing her, or have information that could help our inquiries. We continue to ask residents in Burford and the surrounding areas, as well as any motorists who travelled through this area at around 5:30 a.m. on Wednesday the 5th, to check any CCTV, doorbell, dashcam or other footage they may have. Even the smallest detail could prove vital. We would like to again thank everyone who has shared our appeals, contacted us with information so far, and supported our efforts to find Caroline. This support from the local community has been truly invaluable, and we continue to appeal for anyone who may have seen Caroline or recalls anything unusual during those early morning hours to come forward. Any information, no matter how insignificant, could help us to find her. Please contact Thames Valley Police." Specialists were reportedly shining torches into the gardens of Frethern Close for signs of Mrs. Heininger. Lowlands Rescue said it was called in late last Wednesday to search for, quote, high-risk missing person, and sent out the full team. On Saturday, a group of volunteers met up in the car park at the bottom of Burford Hill to join efforts. In addition, a Help Find Caroline Facebook group has been set up to support the search.
We're delighted to welcome Canon Charles Chadwick, who is going to share his reflection with us.
You may have missed the media reports that at the end of July, Lord John Horam died. Over the course of his very long parliamentary career, which began in 1970 and ended with his death this year, John Horam represented three political parties: Labour, the Social Democrats and the Conservatives, and he served as a government minister under both James Callaghan and John Major. We might see him as a very fine example of someone who embodied the ability to change. In a few weeks' time, Parliament will return, and very soon after the political party conferences will be held. Understandably and quite rightly, political leaders use the occasions to both encourage their own teams and to tell us in the wider electorate how they will change things for the better. Yet moving from talking about change to achieving change can be a complicated and time-consuming process, and it's very rarely undertaken in a straightforward way, and things often don't go to plan. Some of us welcome change with open arms. We relish new jobs with new colleagues and fresh challenges. We embrace a new home with new neighbours in a different village or town or city. We enjoy new foods and other new experiences. Others of us don't seek or enjoy change. We continue to be content with a home we may well have lived in for many decades and the job we've done for a long time as well. and a regular, pretty fixed start tends to suit us as well, if we are that way inclined. I suspect that we assembled everybody who's listening to this edition of Whitney Talking News would find a very broad range of not only feelings and views about change, but also experience of change. Were we to listen carefully to one another's views on change, I suspect we could learn a great deal. While there isn't a right or wrong approach here, for of course we're all different with our own perspectives on things, I believe just occasionally pausing to reflect on change and how we feel about it has some merit. Are we perhaps overcautious to such an extent that we may miss situations and people who might be good for us, and possibly even change us for the better? Are we so quick to change and seek the new that we'll all too easily abandon the tried and tested and worthwhile parts and people of our lives without proper thought as to the consequences? One of the intriguing aspects of Jesus of Nazareth was his ability to help people to change. That most odious and despised of men, Zacchaeus the fraudulent tax collector, suddenly found Jesus spending time with him, was radically changed for the better, and became a model of generosity. Interestingly, we're not though told that he changed his occupation, merely that he did it better. Perhaps there's some part of your and my life that needs to be changed for our good and for the good of others too. To try and identify it, and then perhaps drawing on the resource of faith, we might do well to ask God to help us to do so, and thus we might find its time well spent.
Thank you, Charles, for your thoughtful reflection, and we look forward to your next visit to us.
I shall return. Nice to see you all.
Thank you.
Keep cool.
Bye.
Lots of fluids.
My next piece is about barbecue and litter warning amid fifth heatwave. People are being urged to take extra care in the countryside as Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service warns of a heightened wildfire risk. A combination of soaring temperatures and dry conditions has prompted the service to issue fresh advice ahead of the looming fifth heatwave. It is reminding the public that wildfires can destroy large areas of countryside and pose serious risks to property, people and wildlife. It advised countryside users to pack a picnic instead of taking a barbecue. Litter is another significant hazard, particularly glass bottles, which can focus sunlight and ignite dry vegetation. All rubbish, including cigarette ends and food packaging, should be taken home or disposed of in proper bins. Smokers are reminded to discard cigarettes safely, ensuring they are fully extinguished. Almost three quarters of England and the whole of Wales are now in drought, with farmers struggling with a lack of water, 27 million customers under hosepipe bans, and risk of wildfires and impact on nature. Firefighters have been battling a series of fires across the UK, including one in the New Forest National Park, Hampshire.
And now we have a couple of short items. The first reads, probe launched after break-in at Cotswolds Gem, in inverted commas. An appeal has been launched after a break-in at an antique centre. Thames Valley Police has announced an investigation after Station Mill Antiques on Station Road in Chipping Norton was reportedly broken into on Sunday, August the 2nd. According to the force, a number of valuable items were stolen from the shop. That has been backed by Mr. Clarkson, who lives nearby at Diddley Squat Farm. Indeed, last year, one tourist asked the Grand Tour host on X, "I'm up in Chipping Norton for a couple of nights. Any recommendations for things to do around here?" Mr. Clarkson replied, "Station Mill Antiques and Cotswold Wildlife Park. Those are the gems." Home to over 70 different dealers, the antiques dealership is now recovering from the reported theft of some of its items. Wesley Smith, Police Community and Support Officer for Cherwell and West Oxfordshire, said, at approximately 23:50 on Sunday the 2nd of August, Station Mill Antiques was broken into and a number of valuable items stolen. And the next item is good news for parents during the summer holidays. It reads, kids can travel free on Go Thames Valley buses. Children can travel for free on a bus network this summer. Go Thames Valley, a network that includes Thames Travel, Oxford Bus Company, Carousel Buses and Pullums, will offer free travel to children between the ages of 5 and 15 throughout August as part of the government's Great British Summer Savings campaign. The scheme runs from August the 1st to August the 31st and aims to help families enjoy more affordable days out across Oxfordshire, Buckinghamshire, Berkshire, Gloucestershire and the Cotswolds. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Go Thames Valley, said, "We're delighted to be taking part in this scheme for children during the summer holidays, allowing families to get around for less. Families can travel sustainably and visit a range of places from charming villages to city breaks, while youngsters seeking some independence over the summer are able to travel safely across our network."
This article is titled "Essential Banking Van Set to Close Doors This Year." An essential banking van in a town centre is due to close later this year after a decline in popularity. The Barclays van outside Morrison's in Carterton is set to shut after a gradual drop in customer usage, the Town Council has announced. The service is set to shut on Thursday, October the 22nd. The council said users of the van will still be able to pay cash and cheques into a Barclays account at the nearby post office. Instead, customers will now have to travel 6 miles to the nearest Barclays branch in Whitney. The council said, "Please share this post with anyone who may be affected so they are aware of the upcoming change." A Barclays local van is a mobile cashless banking vehicle that travels to communities to provide face-to-face support where traditional branches have closed. It is part of Barclays' flexible banking network, which includes pods, vans, libraries and town halls. In February 2023, Barclays announced nearly 100 branch closures throughout 2024 and 2025, in addition to the 177 branches it closed in 2023. This included the branch in Abingdon, which went on to close in February 2024. Earlier this year, bosses at Barclays announced plans to reopen more high street branches in a dramatic U-turn for the bank. Over the past decade, thousands of high street bank branches have shut their doors across the country, including those belonging to Barclays, leaving just 206 still operating throughout the UK.
And now people are being told to be careful of fraudulent banknotes that are in circulation. Police are warning the public to be wary of counterfeit cash scams after two incidents in which sellers were paid with fake banknotes while selling high-value items in separate incidents. Reports, both from Chipping Norton and involving counterfeit notes, have prompted officers to issue advice on safe transactions. Further reports have also been made in the Whitney area. The fraudulent notes in both cases were £20 polymer notes featuring the King. Police Community and Support Officer Wesley Smith said, "If you believe you have been given counterfeit banknotes, do not attempt to spend them. Contact Report Fraud on 0300 123 2040 and report the incident while providing as much information as possible about the buyer, any vehicle used, and where and when the sale took place. Please share this advice with friends and family to help prevent others from becoming victims of this type of scam. Although the notes appear genuine at first glance, there are several telltale signs that they are not real. The edges of the vertical holographic security strip were raised on the counterfeit notes, whereas genuine Bank of England polymer notes have a smooth strip. The biggest giveaway is that the majority of the notes had the same serial number. Every real banknote has a unique serial number, so duplicate numbers are a clear sign of forgery. Police believe the safest method of receiving payment is by bank transfer. They advise sellers to request that payment is made while both parties are present and to wait until the funds appear in their account before handing over any item. Screenshots or payment confirmations on the buyer's phone should not be trusted, as these can be easily manipulated or faked. If a seller decides to accept cash, police recommend extra precautions. They suggest meeting inside a bank, allowing staff to check the notes and deposit them before completing the sale. Officers also warn sellers to be alert if the buyer changes plans and sends someone else to collect the item. This can be a tactic used to distance the original fraudster from the transaction. Police advise sellers to inspect every note carefully.
Now for the notice board. We have no listeners' birthdays this week. Sadly, there have been the following deaths reported in the Gazette this week. Margaret Elizabeth Davis, aged 95, on the 27th of July. Basil Hopkins, known as Gone Fishing Hopkins of Ducklington, aged 84, on the 29th of July. David John Johnson, aged 83, on the 2nd of August, and Kath Keslake of the Witchwoods, aged 85, on the 4th of August. We extend our condolences to all the families and friends of the deceased. As well as listening to the USDB stick you receive from us each week, there are several other ways to listen to our editions and magazines, including podcast, internet, on our website, which is wtn.org.uk. Follow the link to listen online. If on any week you do not receive a memory stick from us or there's a technical problem producing them, you can always listen on the phone by dialing 01993 555 986. If you wish to discuss anything with us, just put a piece of paper in the pouch and we will telephone you. Also, please stay tuned at the end of this edition for the TNF radio listings and audio described TV programmes for the coming week. We come to the quiz, and here are the answers to last week's questions, which I thought were pretty hard, so well done if you got any of them right. Number one, which two star signs could you be born under in August? Aries, Leo, Virgo, or Pisces? And the answer is Leo and Virgo. Oh, do any of our readers know that? Right.
Well, I did.
You
I
do, because you set them, Byron. Right, question two. Under the Romans, what month was August? The 6th, 7th, 8th, or 5th month? And the answer is?
6th.
Yes. Well done. Question number three. These are all about August. August is a relatively common name for boys in which country? Sweden, Germany, France, or Spain? Any ideas? No? The answer is Sweden. Question number four. Which famous volcano erupted on the 24th of August, 79 AD? Krakatoa, Vesuvius, Etna, or Fiji?
Vesuvius.
Yes, you all got that one. The answer is Vesuvius. Question number five. The glorious 12th marks the start of legally shooting which game bird in August? Snipe, grouse, pigeon, or pheasant?
Grouse.
Grouse is the answer, of course. So well done if you got those right. So here are my questions for this week, and I've done it on the loose sort of topic of gardens and gardening. So which flower? Question number one. Which flower's dried buds are used to make the spice known as cloves? Lavender, myrtle tree, carnation, or rose? Question number two. What is the practice of training plants into structural, geometric, or animal shapes called? Is it bonsai, xeriscaping, topiary, or espalier? Now, the next three questions are true or false answers. So, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon are the only wonder of the ancient world whose physical existence has never been verified by archaeology. Is that true or false? Question number four, another true or false. Claude Monet's famous water lily garden, which inspired his paintings, is located in the south of France near Nice. And question number five, which is another true or false. In 17th century Holland, single tulip bulbs once sold for more than the price of a luxury house. Okay, well, good luck with those, and I hope you enjoy getting some of them right. Now it's time for editor's choice. As you may know, I quite often write a piece about my travels, but this week I've written about what I did last week, and I didn't have to travel very far to get there. It's entitled A Week at a Residential Theatrical Summer School. Last week, I attended a week-long residential theatre summer school, all for amateurs, something I've done for the last 10 years or so. It's held in the Midlands at a huge conference centre near Stone in Staffordshire. About 200 students turn up each year to do a week's intensive classes of various aspects of theatre: drama, musical theatre, set design, makeup, singing, dancing, costumes, Shakespeare, stage combat, and so on, all taught by professionals who are at the top of their game. This opportunity is run by the National Operatic and Dramatic Association, or NODA, and for me, it's truly my happy place. Even though I'm in my 70s, the chance to have my mind and body stimulated alongside like-minded souls is thrilling, and I love it. The day starts at 9 o'clock with notices, followed by a short physical warm-up of about 15 minutes. Then everyone heads to their room or classroom right through till around 5 o'clock. This year I did the works of Oscar Wilde, who wrote The Importance of Being Earnest, among other things. There were 11 people in my class, and we were taught by a very dynamic young teacher, Ellie Hurt, who looked about 12 but informed us she was 33. We examined the society of Wilde's day and the restrictions he was writing under. We read his plays and acted short scenes out and then discussed them and so on. Coffee, tea and lunch breaks, as well as dinners, were a chance to chat with old friends whom I meet up with year after year and who come from drama or music societies as far afield as the Shetlands, Switzerland, Cornwall and all points in between. Many of us have been going for over a decade, some for longer. It's become like a family of mutually supportive, slightly bonkers, creative people, some of whom are hugely talented. The age range is huge. Lots of youngsters in their 20s taking a week off work to pursue their passion, through to my own older age group still wanting to practice and learn. Sometimes we sign up for something that takes us right out of our comfort zone, but you do your best and no one will criticize. In the evenings, there's an opportunity to take a sampler session of another class to see if you might want to do that in the future. So that goes on until 9 p.m., then time for a quick drink before bed. The last afternoon is given over to a show where those groups that wish to share what they've been working on all week perform to the rest of us. So the dancers perform a routine, always brilliant. The singers sing a couple of songs, also always brilliant. The makeup class did a great job of some people with superb stage makeup of amazing characters, with another member beside them saying how they had achieved this and so on. And then there is the last night party with a fancy dress theme. which this year was A Night in Paris. Well, you will have to imagine nearly 200 people who all entered into the spirit of this, along with copious amounts of alcohol being consumed. There were large numbers of striped T-shirts and berets, strings of onions, and at least two Napoleons, one Eiffel Tower, one Mona Lisa, and so on. I went to the course with two male members of my drama group, and we all dressed up as Can-Can girls from the Moulin Rouge. The boys were very game and wore wigs, and I did a bit of makeup on them. So we were a fun trio to behold in the bar with our flouncy skirts and fishnet tights, and attracted quite a lot of interest, to say the least. The youngsters stay up late enjoying the disco and drinking, but I'm a bit past that, so after a nice dinner and a couple of hours in the bar and lots of photos, I headed back to my room to pack and bed. Saturday morning is full of goodbyes and hugs and cases and costumes and props in the large foyer and taxis looking for their fare, large cases being trundled up to the car park as we all head home. We're tired, really tired, but in the best possible way. I'm looking forward to next year to see what classes will be on offer and hope I'm still well enough to sign up. In my opinion, the important thing about what NODA is offering at summer school is the chance for us all to learn more about our hobby and to keep bringing young people into the performing arts generally to enhance its future.
We move on now to Blenheim Palace. Finishing touches made to Palace's £12 million restoration. A £12 million restoration is set to bring new shine to a county landmark, 300 years in the making. Blenheim Palace in Woodstock is preparing to unveil the results of its most ambitious conservation project yet. The two-year scheme focused on repairing and preserving the palace roof, safeguarding its historic architecture for generations to come. Heather Carter, Managing Director of Blenheim Palace, said, "The success of this project is the result of an exceptional collaboration effort across a whole team of specialists, from our conservation engineers, architects and consultants, to our project managers, heritage, operations and maintenance teams, all working together behind the scenes to protect and restore this extraordinary building for future generations." It's been a massive effort. The project is not just about preserving our past, it's about creating new ways for visitors to engage with our history, now and well into the future. As the scaffolding comes down, visitors will soon be able to enjoy the restored palace in its full glory. This includes the return of the Britannia statue to the Oxfordshire skyline, and the now visible columns of the Great Court. The saloon will begin to be revealed in mid-August, with conservation work on the lower wall paintings continuing into September. The Louis XIV statue will once again be visible, framed by the renewed palace roofline. Re-leading the roof, repairing and replacing slates across key areas, and increasing gutter capacity by more than 300% is also part of the restoration. It also included the restoration of an unusual artwork on the north portico roof, a collection of painted eyes commissioned by Gladys Deacon, the second wife of the ninth Duke of Marlborough. And the piece includes a photograph which looks really awkward for the person involved. It's somebody who has a helmet on and a mask, and he's looking upwards to the ceiling. He's got his hand above his head. It must be really aching work. And he's got a paintbrush, and he's painting the eyelashes around one of the eyes. It really must have taken him ages to do this.
News if you happen to live in Kerbridge, and because my headline reads Pub reopens after 4-year closure. I wish ours would. A Forces veteran and his wife have reopened an Oxfordshire pub after a 4-year closure. The Lord Kitchener in Bampton Road, Kerbridge, near Whitney, closed down in August 2022, but was relaunched last month to the public. Paul and Leanne Newton purchased the property from Green King in 2024, free of lease, and set about organising an extensive refurbishment. Mr. Newton said, "We've been blown away by the support we've received so far. We've already taken bookings for a wedding reception, and we're receiving inquiries for events and private parties right through into 2027. It's been an incredible start." The roadside oak-beamed pub dates from the early 18th century, when it was known as the Herd of Swine. The village social club was based there, and it supported local charities. Military veteran Mr. Newton now wants to turn it into a welcoming hub at the heart of the community. It reopened on Wednesday, July the 15th, but the couple say there are still some final touches to be done. Mr. Newton explained, "We knew there would always be a lot more to do, but we wanted to get open, welcome people in, and build a fantastic team." Included in that team is the head chef, James Brooks, who brings more than 30 years' experience as a professional cook to the Lord Kitchener. The menu is inspired by the vibrant flavours of the Mediterranean, showcasing fresh ingredients and complemented by carefully selected drink pairings. We're excited about the future of the Lord Kitchener and look forward to creating something truly special that the whole Kerbridge community can be proud of. Local councillor Liam McKenzie said after it opened, "Great to see the Lord Kitchener reopen in Kerbridge a couple of weeks ago, bringing the number of pubs in the Ducklington ward from 1 to 2. The only question now is, where else needs a new pub?" Kerbridge and Lew Parish Council owns a 1-acre field alongside the pub called the Lord Kitchener Field. In the early 2000s, the pub was owned by Oxford-based brewery Morell's, which Green King bought.
This article's titled "Downton Set Villagers Plan for 200 Home Development." Villagers in a former Downton Abbey filming location have opposed an almost 200 home Cotswolds development. An official application has been launched for the land west of Mount Owen Road in Bampton. Developer Anne Will Homes plans to build 190 homes, 40% of which would be classed as affordable. The planning application outlines that 65% of the homes would be either 1 or 2 bedrooms, with the remainder having 3 or 4 bedrooms. Tens of residents have rejected the planning application on West Oxfordshire District Council's website. Dr. William Outhwaite of Broad Street in Bampton said, "Bampton has already been massively damaged by excessive and intensive building programmes which have overloaded its medical, educational and other infrastructure. And this proposal would add to the loss of agricultural land and of a still attractive site on the edge of the village." Karen Williams of Calais Dean said, "Water pipes will be most impacted and be under immense amount of pressure, causing terrible flooding, similar to the flood seen in 2007. A spokesperson for Hourigan said, "The scheme would comprise a mix of both open market homes and affordable homes and include significant areas of accessible open space. Bampton was used by ITV for several locations in the Downton Abbey television and film series, including the Old Rectory, the Public Library, and the Parish Church of St Mary the Virgin."
And now the Gazette is talking about why we're not seeing so many flags on lampposts these days. "Oxfordshire's ban on lamppost flags has been slammed as nonsense by former government minister. Reform UK MP Suella Braverman said the ruling brought by the County Council proved the UK was a joke. Ms Braverman previously served as Conservative Home Secretary and Attorney General. The County Council was granted a High Court injunction to stop unknown people from placing flags on lampposts in Oxfordshire. It claimed that raising flags near highways risked public safety and involved trespass and obstruction. The widespread flying of Union and St George's cross flags followed an online campaign called Operation Raise the Colours. In a judgment on a Friday, Mr Justice Dexter Diaz made an injunction ordering unknown people not to attach flags to highway structures or paint them on roads in Oxfordshire. Breach of the injunction can lead to seizure of assets, unlimited fines or imprisonment. In the wake of the announcement, Ms Braverman, who's the Member of Parliament for Fareham and Waterlooville, took to social media site X and wrote, "Joke country, flying the national flags in Oxfordshire now amounts to breaking the law. Only reform will bring this nonsense to an end." The judge said that workers have faced abuse or intimidation while taking flags down, as well as residents. He added that maintenance teams have been working in fear and are told to wear face coverings and have had to check vehicles for tracking tags after a worker's home address was published.
And finally, good news. Therapy Pony Vino brings joy to care home. Therapy Pony trotted into the spotlight during a heartwarming care home visit. Vino, a gentle pony, delighted residents and staff at Southern Down Care Home in Chipping Norton. The visit was made extra special by the presence of a BBC film crew who were filming the visit. Subra Krishnan, the general manager at Southern Down, said, "We had the best time with Vino. He is such a gorgeous pony. Our residents loved spending time with him and finding out all about him. We've also been very lucky to have the BBC with us today. We're looking forward to finding out if we make the cut when they finalise the film they're making about therapy animals like Vino." Residents enjoyed the chance to meet Vino up close and learn about his favourite things to do and what he likes to eat, thanks to his handler from Happy Hooves Equine Limited. And there's a great picture of Vino the therapy pony wearing a therapy horse blanket, meeting one of the residents who looks absolutely delighted to meet him. And after reading that, I feel a little hoarse. Sorry.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. Please remove the memory stick from the playback unit and close the metal shield. Remember to reverse the plastic address label on the yellow pouch before posting it back to us. Please send the pouches back as soon as possible, as we sometimes run out of labels and pouches and are then unable to continue our service to you. If you wish to contact us, simply put a slip of paper inside your pouch and we will then phone you. So now it's become the recent habit to end with a joke. So here's my joke for this week, and I hope you like it. Why did the mushrooms get invited to all the best parties? Because they were the fun guys. So it only remains for me to thank the Whitney Gazette for the stories we've used tonight. Thanks to our technical expert, Rob Oxpring. The copiers are myself and Byron Russell, who will copy the memory sticks. To our admin team, who've been checking the pouches and memory sticks you have returned to us and keeping our records, they were Marnie Leach and Doreen Turner. And finally, our four readers, Jean, Byron, Melissa and Mick. So I know everyone would like to say goodbye. So until our next edition,
goodbye. Goodbye.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Now for a look at some of the coming week's radio highlights, compiled by Leslie and read by Gilly. And we start with programmes that are broadcast at the same time each day from Monday. The book of the week is The Fire in the Mountain, Sicily, Etna and Her People by Helen Attlee. It combines travel writing with history, mythology, geology, gastronomy and horticulture to explore the lives of people living in the shadow of Mount Etna. It's on Radio 4 at 11:45 a.m, repeated at 12:30 a.m. Human intelligence is a new 10-part series which explores stories that celebrate the human mind by showing how people came up with brilliant ideas, beginning with ancient Roman statesman Cicero, on Radio 4 at 1:45 p.m. Composer of the Week features Felix Mendelssohn. Kate Mollison follows the composer's journeys across Europe, revealing how family ambition, artistic mentorship, and the lure of distant horizons helped shape one of the most gifted musical minds of the 19th century. On Radio 3 at 4 p.m. The book at bedtime is Mr. Sidhu's Post Office by Aman Brar. A postmaster is torn between an ordered life and a future of new possibilities when he gets a second chance at love. In 10 parts at 10:45 p.m. on Radio 4. Back to Saturday, the 15th of August. In this week's Key Changes, Radio 3's Essential History of Classical Music, Gillian Moore is joined by historian Sir Simon Sharma to rewind to 1807 to explore the impact of Beethoven's Razumovsky quartets, which were longer, more complex, and more adventurous than any that had come before, at 1 p.m. on Radio 3. Fork in the Road, Cherie on Top is an alternative history comedy drama, imagining what might have happened if Cherie Blair had won the Labour seat in Sedgefield at the 1983 general election instead of her husband Tony, and she becomes the nation's second female prime minister, at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. Continuing this year's BBC Proms, in tonight's concert live from the Royal Albert Hall, Sir Antonio Pappano conducts the BBC Symphony Chorus and the London Symphony Chorus and Orchestra in Berlioz's Requiem, premiered in 1807 and featuring more than 400 performers. The work is a colossal statement of faith, fear and hope, at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. On to Sunday, 16th of August. The Colours in Sound with Caroline Shaw is a new 3-part series. In the first programme, A Rainbow in Tones, the presenter explores how composers use paintbrushes to draw light to hidden qualities within tones, at 3 p.m. on Radio 3. In the Grand North Atlantic Home Video Archive, author Seamus O'Reilly and his siblings unravel their father's archive of hundreds of films and other material recorded off television. It is a snapshot of Northern Ireland in the late 1980s, but also provides a trove of personal shared memories, at 7:15 p.m. on Radio 4. Repeated at 3 p.m. on Wednesday. In tonight's BBC Prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, Vasily Petronko conducts the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in works by Webern and Walton, plus Elgar's cello concerto, with Spanish cellist Pablo Ferrandez in his Prom's premiere, at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. Now, Monday, 17th of August. The Great Crime Mystery is a new 3-part series in which former BBC Home Editor Mark Easton examines the huge fall in both violent crime and property crime in Britain over the past 30 years. It is a phenomenon, he says, which has been routinely ignored, dismissed, or denied, despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, and signs that the decrease is slowing underline the need to understand what happened in the past, at 9 a.m. on Radio 4, repeated at 9 p.m. Prom Nights on Radio 2 is the first of a 5-night showcase of non-classical genres that have featured in this season's proms. Stuart McConey hosts a celebration of progressive rock most associated with 1960s and 70s acts such as Yes, Genesis, Emerson, Lake and Palmer and the Moody Blues at 7 p.m. on Radio 2. In the first of four Poetry Please programmes, Roger McGough talks to poet Jacob Holly about his choices from the Poetry Please request database at 11:30 on Radio 4. Next, Tuesday, 18th of August. If you fancy a jolly good bit of fun, try the afternoon drama No Prime Minister, inspired by a real-life event. In 1984, actor Paul Eddington and the cast of TV's Yes Minister are cajoled into performing a comedy sketch with Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. In The Deadliest Book in England, Susie Dent investigates William Tyndale's New Testament translation of 1526. It brought Bible stories into everyday language, but it also caused a political storm and made its author a fugitive. At 4 p.m. on Radio 4, repeated Sunday at 8 p.m. Saving Young Men from Murder, The Homeboy Story, follows an investigation by Dr. Gwen Adshead, presenter of the 2024 series of Wreath Lectures entitled Four Questions About Violence. The psychiatrist visits Homeboy Industries in Los Angeles, the largest centre for gang rehabilitation in the world, and asks if something similar could work in the UK. At 8 p.m. on Radio 4, repeated Wednesday at 11 a.m. And don't forget In Touch, news, views and information for people who are blind or partially sighted, at 8:40 p.m. on Radio 4. On to Wednesday, 19th of August. The Q is a 2022 archive on 4 documentary, inspired by The Q, which saw hundreds of thousands of mourners lining the streets of London to see the lying in state of the late Queen Elizabeth II. Presenter Mark Thomas learns about the history of queuing and why the British claim to be so good at it. On Radio 4 Extra at 10 a.m, repeated at 4 p.m. and 12 midnight. In All Under One Magnetosphere, five natural radio enthusiasts venture beyond the electromagnetic pollution of the city using simple homemade equipment to tune into the Earth's natural static from sources such as solar storms and bursts of lightning and reveal a rich textured soundscape that has rarely been heard. At 3:30 p.m. on Radio 4, repeated Friday at 11:30 p.m. Tonight's BBC Prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, features the Glyndebourne Festival Opera in a semi-staged performance of Ariadne auf Naxos, Strauss's opera within an opera, which has wowed many critics this summer, at 7 p.m. on Radio 3. Now for Thursday, the 20th of August. A new 18-part series of This Cultural Life begins with Sebastian Fawkes, author of Birdsong, The Girl at the Lion d'Or, and Charlotte Gray, talking about his influences and formative cultural experiences at 11 a.m. on Radio 4. The afternoon drama is The Observer's Book. After the sudden death of her friend Jo, artist Misha persuades her lifelong friend Grace to accompany her to his remote country cottage to sort his belongings at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4. This is followed by the first in a new 7-part series of Open Country. At the Ancient Technology Centre in Dorset, with its unique collection of archaeologically accurate reconstructions of ancient buildings from different time periods, Martha Kearney learns ancient skills like forging a knife, flint knapping, and making fire with flint at 3 p.m. on Radio 4. Tonight's BBC Prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, is a centenary tribute to jazz giant Miles Davis with the BBC Concerts Orchestra and soloists, including American trumpeter Ambrose Akinmusari. Lastly, we come to Friday, 21st of August. In this week's edition of the food programme, entitled Fork and Knife, Jimmy Famurewa explores how the way we eat shapes ideas of identity, belonging and culture. From the arrival of the fork in Europe to the Nigerian tradition of eating with your hands, Chinese chopsticks and the formal rituals of the British dinner table, he uncovers some surprising stories about how we consume food. At 11 a.m. on Radio 4, repeated Saturday at 10:15 p.m. In the documentary Heart and Soul, Isabel Cockerell is in Rome, where she speaks to a Catholic priest and a tech entrepreneur about the impact AI might have on humanity's spiritual yearnings. Could the most far-reaching philosophical debate of the 21st century boil down to whether the Catholic Church can influence the most disruptive technology of our time? On BBC World Service at 1:30 p.m. and 10:30 p.m. Finally, tonight's BBC Prom, live from the Royal Albert Hall, features the BBC Philharmonic Orchestra in a programme that includes Haydn's Farewell Symphony, and culminating in Mahler's great vocal and orchestral work, Das Lied von der Erde, The Song of the Earth, at 7 p.m. on Radio 3. Happy listening.
Hello, here are the television listings from the main terrestrial channels for the week Saturday the 15th of August until Friday the 21st of August, chosen and read for you by me, Glenys. Saturday, BBC One. At 2:30 we have the film Chicken Run, an animated comedy adventure with chickens planning their escape from an egg farm. The evening from 7:15 is dominated by the European Athletics Championships, which may affect later timings, until 10:20, when there's the film Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise. On BBC Two, there are children's programmes from 6:05 until 8:25. Then at 12 noon, Lorraine Pascal shows us how to be a better cook, followed at 12:30 by Holmes Under the Hammer. Then right till 11:50, when there's the film The Graduate with Dustin Hoffman. On ITV at 4 p.m, there's the James Bond film Moonraker. At 7, there's Deal or No Deal celebrity special, followed at 8 by another James Bond film, Skyfall. And rounding off the evening at 11, there's the 5th episode of the gripping drama, The Staircase. On Channel 4, there's a real feast of American sitcoms, starting at 6:05 with 4 episodes of Cheers, followed by Everybody Loves Raymond. At 5:10, there's a triple bill of Frasier, followed at 11:25 by 5 episodes of The Simpsons. Then on to the afternoon, where at 4:30, there's George Clark's Amazing Spaces, with George at a glamping site. Then on to 7 p.m, with Sandy Toksvig's Hidden Wonders from Cookham Abbey, with evidence of an early medieval monastery. The history theme continues with Lost Worlds, Dawn of Civilizations, which has Bettany Hughes visiting Neolithic sites in Turkey. At 9, we have the final episode of Dictator, the Hitler interviews. At 10, there's Concorde Crash, the days that shocked the world. And the evening rounds off at 11 with the Nicolas Cage comedy, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Two programmes on Channel 5. At 20 to 2, Coastal Adventures with Helen, Jules and JB explore the Cumbrian shoreline. Followed at 20 to 3 by Cold War Secrets in Fife. On now to Sunday. On BBC One at 10:35 in the morning, there's the film Lyle Lyle Crocodile, a musical comedy where a shy boy befriends a shy croc living in the attic. At 12:15, there's Bargain Hunt, and at 3:05, The Mating Game looks at the toad-headed agamas of southern Russia. At 4:05, there's Holmes Under the Hammer, then Athletics from 7:15 until 10:30, when there's Mission Impossible. Timings may change depending on what happens at the Athletics. On BBC Two at 11:35 in the morning, there's The Great British Sewing Bee. Then at 10 p.m, there's the film The French Connection, with Gene Hackman smashing a drugs ring operating from Marseille. Followed at 20 to 12 by Bonnie and Clyde, with Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty. On ITV at 11:30, there's Fern Britton Inside the Vets, and the Bond film Octopussy at 2:10. This is followed at 5:45 by The Chase Around the World, and at 7 by Force of Nature, exploring how animals adapted to extreme cold are coping in today's warmer weather. At 9, we have the Dutch detective series Van der Valk, and at 10:15, the new series Sunny Nights, when two American siblings relocate to open a tanning shop in Sydney, but soon get mixed up with all the wrong people. On Channel 4 from 10 to 6, there's the usual American sitcoms, followed at 1 by The Doghouse. At 4:35 p.m, we have Our Farm Next Door with Amanda and Clive Owen. At 5:35, there's The Worst House on the Street. And at 7, Gogglebox. At 8, there's Richard E. Grant's Very Modern Odyssey. At 9, The Piano. And at 10 p.m, Celebrity Gogglebox. Now Monday, and first the programmes which show at regular times most days. On BBC One at 11:15, there's Holmes Under the Hammer. At 12, there's Bargain Hunt, which is also on Sunday. At 3:30, there's The Repair Shop. At 7:30, there's EastEnders. On BBC Two at 3:15, there's Animal Park Summer. At 3:30, there's Bear Grylls Wild Reckoning, Not Friday. On ITV at 2, there's Dickinson's Real Deal, only on Monday and Tuesday. At 8, there's Emmerdale. And at 8:30, there's Coronation Street. On Channel 4 at 6:30 a.m, there's The King of Queens. At 7:45, there's Everybody Loves Raymond. And at 9:10, there's Frasier. At 12:10, there's Find It, Fix It, Flog It. And at 5, there's Chateau DIY. Followed at 6 by American Pickers, Not Friday. So, on to the daily listings. Monday, on BBC One at 9, there's Death in Paradise. And at 10:11, there's Mission Impossible 3. On BBC Two at 9, there's the first episode of Buried, where Michael Sheen investigates the claims of chemical poisoning near his hometown of Port Talbot. And at 10 p.m, we have Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing. On ITV at 9, there's Long Lost Family, What Happened Next, with Davina McCall. At 10:45, there's Cold Case Forensics. And at 11:40, The Assembly, where celebrities are grilled by autistic and neurodivergent interviewers. On Channel 4 at 8, there's Martin and Roman's Irish Road Trip. At 9, we have Celebrity Hunted. This is also on Tuesday at 9. And at 10, there's The Secret Lives of Gypsy Wives, also on Tuesday at 11:05. Now to Tuesday. On BBC One at 8, we've got The Great British Sewing Bee, followed at 9 p.m. by Celebrity MasterChef, also on Wednesday at 9 p.m. On BBC Two at 7 p.m, there's Nigelissima, and at 7:30, there's Race Against the Tide, where teams compete to save their sand sculptures from the incoming tide. Staying with the sea theme, at 8, there's Saving Lives at Sea, and this continues at 9 with Emergency 24/7. And for those of you who like a scare before bedtime, there's Interview with a Vampire at 11:05. Over now to ITV, where at 9 p.m. we have True Crime Presents, No Escape, Married to a Stalker, followed at 10:45 p.m. by the Bond film Octopussy. And on to Channel 4. At 8, there's The Great ADHD Myth, where an NHS psychiatrist challenges conventional thinking about ADHD. At 10, there's Gogglebox. On Wednesday, on BBC One at 8 p.m, there's Fake or Fortune, What Happened Next. On BBC Two at 8:30 a.m, there's Great Continental Railway Journeys with Michael Portillo in Corsica. At 8 p.m, there's Digging for Britain from Cardiff and Salisbury Plain. And at 9, there's Murder, Death of a Dog Walker. On ITV at 9, there's a new series of Professor T. And at 10:45 p.m, Long Lost Family, Born Without a Trace, What Happened Next. On Channel 4 at 8, there's Extraordinary Extensions, where Tinny Temper meets people who have built unusual extensions to their houses. At 9, there's a new series of Love You to Death. And from 10, there's two episodes of Outback Murder Highway, which is also on Thursday. On Thursday, on BBC One at 8, there's Dragon's Den, where more hopefuls pitch their business ideas. And at 9, there's the first episode of a new series of Ludwig, the comedy detective series. On BBC Two at 8, there's The Big Deal with Steph McGowan, where teams of would-be art dealers try their best to sell artwork. Followed at 9 p.m. by A House Through Time with David Olusoga in Edinburgh. And rounding off the evening at 11:05, there's Emergency 24/7. On ITV at 7:30 p.m, there's Tom Kerridge Cooks Italy. And at 9, there's The Chase Around the World. And at 10:45, the Bond film Skyfall. On Channel 4 at 8, we have Renovation Rescue. And at 9, there's Love You to Death. On Channel 5 at 9, there's Benidorm is Murder, starring John Hannah. Finally, to Friday the 21st of August. On BBC One at 2 p.m, there's The Hairdresser Mysteries. And at 8 p.m, there's Celebrity MasterChef. At 9:30, there's the final episode of the new sitcom, Anne Droid. On BBC Two at 9, there's the final episode of Bergerac. On ITV at 10, there's another final episode, this time of The Twisted Tale of Amanda Knox. And at 11:05, there's the film Rush Hour, a martial arts action comedy starring Jackie Chan. On Channel 4 at 8, there's another final episode, this time of Surgery Secrets of the Super Rich. On Channel 5 from 9, there's 2 hour-long episodes of the new Australian drama Heat, where 2 expat families unite for a summer holiday, with tensions arising beneath the surface. So that's it all for this week's television listings. I hope you find something you enjoy. Goodbye from me, Glenys.
TNF Soundings.